views and religion. I just wondered how the atmosphere was with Rogan, because I think Rogan looks at religion like it was used to trick us. When I say us, I mean Black Americans. You know, we believe in God. We know God is real. God has showed up in our lives in so many different ways and things. But you got certain people like Rogan and the Scientology, that whole side of things, where they look at life from a scientific perspective, and they think that we evolved from, which there's evidence of that as well. And so it gets slippery. So to see these two people sit down, right? So you got Rogan as a tycoon in his own right, and you got Kanye West, who's a tycoon in his own right. And here West comes in standing on God, standing on Jesus. And here Rogan is kind of standing on science. For this interview to go forward, though, Rogan is going to have to do one or two things. One, he's going to have to either acknowledge God as the definition that we know, that we project, and what Kanye West is rolling with. He has to either, one, do that, or he has to, two, compartmentalize this God talk that Kanye West is coming with, and putting it in a situation where he attaches it in his mind to higher power, positive energy. You know, they like to say certain times, they like to say, you know, just positive energy, like just like a higher power, just the universe, just the anything but somebody that rose in 7 days and things like that. As much as I'm proud of this thing coming together the way it is, right? I also got a sense of not really getting, you know, understanding the reach of just yet. And as I'm learning, I think learning, no matter what, is always gonna put you in like a weird childlike mentality. You know, it's gonna always put you in a place where you find yourself exploring something you know nothing about, and the Easter eggs you find along the way, the things that I'm sure people have uncovered before you, but for whatever reason. I don't know why that happened, but for whatever reason, you know, you're so passionate about the journey, and so you feel like you're uncovering shit that's never been thought about. And I think that feeling is important. Like, to even have that feeling, I think that's important, because if you don't have that feeling, see, so much of success and so much of chasing a dream, I'm finding, in my opinion and on my journey, has to deal with the satisfaction of just feeling it. You know, just feeling like you're accomplishing things, or feeling like you own something. If everything you've done, you saw somebody else do, or you don't see your innovative touch on it at all, I think that it's going to be a situation where it'll be probably hard for you to create You know what I'm saying? Because, you know, when I be logical about this shit, I say, I know somebody done thought about this shit. You know what I'm saying? But then in my brain, it's like, nah, you the coldest, nigga. You uncovering the hell out of this shit, you know? But anyway, welcome to another episode of It's Up There Podcast with your boy, Luna Luciano. I am your active and attractive host for another episode of one of the fastest growing podcasts in the market at this point. I want to say thank you for the people, my regular people that's watching. Man, y'all are really engaging in the product. But I want to see you guys like and share and comment and talk to me. And the new people that's getting my clips here and there, that's coming on board, I want to say welcome to y'all. This is his Up There Podcast. If you come here for all seriousness, you're in the wrong place. If you come here for all bullshit, you're in the wrong place. I think we meet somewhere in the middle. And try to deal with information. We got a right to change our mind. We got a right to take in new information. We got a right to go get information. We got a right not to let allow others to speculate when we have information. How rough that may come off is not something I'm interested in even addressing. But I think seeing what the overall objective is, which is getting out the correct information, I think that we can't let the problem be more important than the truth, right? And so the problem that you're uncomfortable can't be more important than me making sure the truth is in a position where the data is out there for the people to move forward with. But thank you, man. Thank you. It's Up There Podcast. It's been growing. It's been doing its thing. It's been a journey for me. And I ain't gonna lie to y'all. You know, I do everything myself, you know what I'm saying? So I have to find motivations from other places, you know? And so some weeks with this podcast, although I do them, you know, and I got a lot of them put up, you know, already. But some weeks with the podcast, it's like, man, I don't feel like it. You know what I mean? And that's what I'm saying. That's why I think when... and we'll go ahead and get into the podcast. I wasn't gonna start with Joe Budden. I was gonna get into Joe Budden later, but we can start with it. So in addition to that, man, just welcome, you know, along this journey with me and being actually one of the more important pieces of the journey, you know, being one of the more important things that makes this whole thing go. Because a lot of people don't know how to get the audience. I'm learning. I don't really know how to get the audience. I know the people that like me genuinely just because, and they got on me through their own merit. You know, nobody really forced them. You can follow me if you're watching the audio version of this. You could catch the video version of It's Up There Podcast right now exclusively on FOGFO TV on YouTube. If you're watching the video version of this, you can definitely catch the audio. Anywhere you get podcasts, just type in It's Up There Podcast with Looney and you'll get that. Also, if you're one of my many people that listen to my music, thank you. Got about 30 days before I'm dropping something else, 30, 45 good days before I drop something else. So I think it's just important and imperative for me to start to kind of let the people that really follow me know, because I know the ones that's really engaged with me, y'all watch these whole podcasts, and you know, so... I want to give y'all that Easter egg as well. A lot to talk about, a lot going on in the world, a lot going on just in the culture. We are in a very, very crazy time. Yesterday was the single highest day of COVID-19 cases in the United States. And I just want to put that in context and then put that in perspective for some of y'all. That means yesterday was the highest day ever since coronavirus was introduced in the United States. Now, what does that say? Now, we've shut down. That means the numbers that it took for us to shut down was not worse than the numbers that we have right now. So I'm saying? So the numbers we have right now is kind of the numbers that's way more, you know, gruesome. And also, if you just know history and you just put everything in context, in 1920 or 1919, one of those years, 100 years ago, there was a pandemic. Spanish flu, and the second wave came around and it killed, I think, 40% of the population. So that means 4 out of 10 people died. So if you knew 10 people, 4 of them was guaranteed to die from the Spanish flu. Like, I think people don't know how crazy that is. And so the pandemic is coming. The second wave will be, it's on the way. And so if you can play and act like it ain't nothing finna happen, there's a second wave on the way, and it's gonna be worse than the first wave. That's just how it is. In politics, and just I hear certain people hoping that just as a culture, just as Americans, that we obtain something called herd immunity, where you become, so many people get it that it becomes like a natural thing, almost like a cold or something, and then you're just able to naturally fight it off. The immune system starts to build itself in a way where it can combat the actual disease or sickness or virus, in this case. So I mean, I think it's something worth telling people. I think if you're watching me, I need you to really understand that this is about to get really, really slippery in the winter time. I think if we wasn't in an election year, they probably would have shut back down. But they're using the coronavirus as part of the election ploy. So some people are on this side of it and some people are on that side of it. And when you politicize something like our lives and our safety, it's a crazy thing. But then when you look at politics, all of that is politicized. Our lives and our safety run through them, which is why we're never living a happy life or we're never really safe, you know? And so looking at it is just a very weird thing. One second. And so in addition to all of that, just trying to be someone who brings something to the game that just is like a new thing, you know? It's like breath of fresh air, motherfucker that ain't really with the fuck shit, right? So this week, man, a lot happened. We had Tory Lanez bodyguard came out and said some things. And so for those of you that don't know, Tory Lanez alleged former bodyguard addresses the Megan Thee Stallion shooting incident. with this, hold on. So with this bodyguard coming out and speaking and saying things, I think it's a couple of things we need to put in perspective and just make sure that we have at the forefront of our understanding and of our minds. Number one, I think this was about an hour interview. I didn't watch the entire thing. I think with so much going on in the world and also so much what ifs surrounding the Megan Thee Stallion and Tory Lanez shooting, it's starting to get people disengaged from it. Because it's, and not by any means do we, you know, act like it's nothing, but I'm saying the interest of most people that was there to begin with is starting to, I don't want to say wing off, but I do want to say decrease. I don't know how fast or how slow that's happening, but I would say that that's happening. But with the bodyguard, he said a couple of different things. Said Tory Lanez wasn't that type of individual. Said he never saw Tory Lanez scream at a girl, at his real loved ones, which, you know, all these are great things to say about someone. But you're a former bodyguard. Were you there that night? Was that the bodyguard that was arrested with him? And that's what I'm saying. That's why you have to appreciate words, and you have to appreciate people like me, because I come in the game to break down these type of little shenanigans that they do play, right? When you say Tory Lanez former bodyguard, damn, it kind of muddies the water. And it says, well, damn, he was arrested with a bodyguard. Is that the dude that he was arrested with? Or is that the dude who was with him before any of this happened? Because that is important to how much equity I'm putting in what he's saying, right? If he was there that night saying that, that's something totally different than a nigga that met him, you know, along his journey and stood next to him, protected him for a certain amount of time, man. So I think even just putting that in perspective is very important and way more important than led to believe, because I'm not sure that that's been clarified. I know he's a bodyguard and I know you know him. But were you the bodyguard that was there at night that was arrested with him, that they alleged had in the car with him? Or are you some other guy? Because that's where I get confused at. Also, and in addition to that, Tory Lanez, a bodyguard, also said, you know, he always seen him happy. He's someone that wouldn't do anything to a woman. He saw this with his own eyes, and also said that he, what else did he say? That we also heard him say that he wouldn't do it, and he was always someone that he would stand by, saying that it couldn't be true that he shot him. Now, to me, that is a statement that can't be made, especially at this point of time. You can't really make that statement. You can't really put yourself in a situation to think about that. You see what I'm saying? You're not in position. Hold on, y'all. Oh, okay. So in addition to that, he says that, hey, Tory Lanez wouldn't do this. That isn't the kind of guy he is. I know Tory Lanez. I'm going to say that's irresponsible to say. And the reason I'm going to say that is because there's been people that I thought were happy that committed suicide. But if you would have asked me about that person, oh, no, that person is a go-getter. They're up there. They're always upbeat. I mean, they're always helping people. They're never not doing something. And then next thing you know, I get a call that this person committed suicide. They got a whole list of shit that they don't allow me to see. Or they had I have a whole list of shit I'm not going to allow y'all to see. I imagine Tory has a whole list of shit that he wouldn't allow the bodyguard to see. I'm imagining Meg has a whole list of shit that she wouldn't allow Tory to see. Or Tory has a whole, like, it's everybody has their own little shit tucked away. And so for you to be able to say that, I'm not sure if that's calculated. But when a woman end up shot and someone says that, you tend to want to know, like, what makes you be so sure that when we don't really know? You know what I mean? We really don't know, like, real nigga shit. I ain't saying Meg right. I ain't saying he right. I'm saying we really don't know. So for you to say, well, I've been around him, he's not the type to do that. It's like, dude, like I say, I know people that I thought was happy that committed suicide. I thought dudes that I thought was stand-up guys that went to prison and ratted, told, you know. I've heard things about dudes that I thought was real that did things that we would consider fake. So I'm never for sure about anything. You know, I'm never 100% for sure about anything other than I'm going to protect my family and give me some money. You know what I'm saying? And so anything else is just kind of, we really don't know. So I think it's irresponsible to say something like that about him. Also this week we saw Bill Cosby, new mugshot. So for those of you that don't know, a new mugshot was released on Bill Cosby shortly after doing some time. He's been in there, I think, a couple of years now. And he's now doing what's called an updated mugshot. They do that periodically in case, I guess, you escape and they got an up-to-date picture of you. When it comes to Bill Cosby, you know, he cracked a smile in that mugshot. And I think you're looking at a man that you tried to break. You look at that a man that you tried to bend and he didn't break. And he didn't bend. A lot of times we fear and we're scared of what we don't know, right? So going into jail probably was more stressed than he actually is when he actually got in jail. Because it's the unknown. You know, it's the unknown. It's like, man, I'm going in here. What's it going to be like? You know, how is it going to be? You know, what is it going to cost me to survive? And I'm a rich old man. Are they going to hurt me? Is the government going to come and kill me? Is these people going to put a hit on me? You know, just those anxieties. Sometimes you just got to go ahead and get in the water and get all that off of you. Because that right there is bars. That right there is jail that controls you. you know, that dictates you. Fear, it dictates you. It makes you not want to move, not want to do things because you don't know, you know, will it hurt? You know, I teach my kids, don't worry about it. It's going to hurt. Go at it with that mindset. It's going to hurt. It's going to hurt. And if it don't, that's just a plus. But it's going to hurt. I'm okay with it hurting. I'm fine with it hurting. I'm fine with failing. I'm fine with, you know, doing things when it's necessary. I'm okay with that. Whatever outcome, whatever outlook, whatever update, I'm okay with that. Whatever inconvenience, whatever income, whatever I don't, you know, I'm okay with that. Whatever it may be, right? So I think when Bill actually got in jail, I think he was in a situation to be like, man, it ain't as rough. They can't break me. He probably got strong. See, some niggas, the worst thing you can do is lock them up. The worst thing you can do to some motherfuckers is lock them up. Like Tupac, look at Pac. You know what I'm saying? A lot of the young niggas nowadays, they going in and out of prison. They getting out and really not, you know, really not. I think their goals and aspirations was different than Pac. But look at Pac. Look how Pac did his thing. Look at, you know, the situation he was in. You know, he went to jail. He came out on some straight other shit. He was already on some other shit before he went in, but he came out on some other shit too. Because sometimes what you do is you dealing with somebody who can save their moments, save their speed burst, if you will. So when you put me somewhere like that and I know it won't be long, it's not like it's going to be a 10 or some shit. It's a year, two, three, little shit like that. Not with Bill. Bill got an 8, I think. So he's doing a little, he'll do a little bit more than that. But when you put me in there and you allow me to gather my thoughts, you allow me to slow down, you allow me to put all the pieces together, I think that's where you fall victim to me. You fall victim to me if I ever plan against you. You know what I mean? That's why the element of surprise is always a beautiful thing. You know, because if I ever plan against you, you're in trouble. You can't beat me in preparation. I'm too impulsive. I'm sorry. I'm too obsessive. You know, I pay attention to detail. So there's nothing you're going to be able to do with a motherfucker like that. You know, so I think Bill may come out stronger than before. He may come out better than before. Because you tried, yeah, I think, again, in that picture, you're looking at a man you tried to break. I didn't break. I didn't bend. I was 80. They threw me in here. I was acting blind. All kind of shit before that. Nigga, I was trying to get out of that shit. But when they actually sat me in there with the lions, I came back running the pack. Because the lions, one thing about the lions, they respect game. And the ones that don't respect game, somebody they respect game. So they can't get around. You see what I'm saying? So if you know what I mean, it's a situation you can thrive in, man, for the most part. You know what I mean? Like, far as it ain't nothing to be spooked about if you a Bill Cosby nigga. Most people grew up on you. They know them people done you wrong. And, you know, the system, this, that, they know. Another thing I thought about is just being familiar with the prison and the guidelines is when Bill Cosby goes up for parole, does he admit guilt like the parole board wants you to be eligible? Or does he say what he's been known to be saying and say, hey, I don't have a need to feel sorry because I ain't did nothing. See, again, it's Up There Podcast, probably the only place you get these kind of conversations. But being familiar with the prison system, right? You have to admit guilt. You have to come in there and accept responsibility. And I'm a changed person that know what I've done, and that's not something that I'm going continue to do, and I know my wrongdoing, and I admit that because they say for you to change, you have to admit. And for you to get out on parole, you need to change. See how they tie all that shit in? So for you to change, you need to admit. Before you to admit, you need to change. And before you can get out on parole, you got to admit that you changed. You see what I'm saying? And so for you to admit that you changed, you got to accept responsibility of what happened. These are the guidelines, right, of how they want you to approach the situation. So that means I want you to understand that rules aren't what they are intended for. They are what they are product of, meaning give a fuck what you put the rule there for. Whatever that motherfucking rule is producing is what it should be defined by. You see what I mean? I don't give a fuck. So you put the rule there for again, that scenario I just painted, that for us to allow you to get out on parole, we have to really feel like you changed, right? So for me to change in their mind, I got to say I'm wrong for what I've done and I've learned from what I've done. Now, in certain instances, that's a great fit. What my problem is they have these one size fit all laws for blacks, because we know that the laws ain't the same for most white Americans. But for blacks, they have these one size fits all type laws. So they place this very, very, very They place this very regular pattern on a very complex puzzle. You see what I mean? So what they're doing is they're taking one outcome and putting it on every person that goes through the jail. So we're going to say that the DA and the judicial system got it right every time. So the people that's in here, and then sometimes it fucks you up because you got niggas that's innocent of crimes that go in there and say that just to get out on parole. And then when they try to give the time back, I'm not sure if they even able to use what you said in parole, that you done it and this and that, on you to not give the time back. It's like, it's so fucked up. Like, the situation is just fucked. You know what I mean? So yeah, you know. So just thinking about that. But, you know, Bill Cosby is known to tell people, I ain't done nothing, I have no need to feel sorry. So if that's the case, you're going to have to do all the time, while the 80% or whatever the state calls for in his area. Unless he, you know, whatever. But I'm not sure that he's going to say that, because, again, we'll see. Again, does he save his career or does he save his life? Because in certain instances, niggas will look at it like you save your life by getting your old ass out of jail. You see what I'm saying? But you end your career, because everybody that had the, well, we think he got set up, we don't really know if this is true, all them, you no longer, they done. You no longer get them. You know what I'm saying? Because you now have said what it is. And if that's the truth, what it really is, you know? But if it's not the truth, I think that's detrimental to everything. But it's just going to be interesting to see how it ties in, because they're going to want him to talk about that to get out of prison. They're going to want you to admit to guilt on the parole board in front of parole to even get out on parole. I don't know if they've ever let someone out that says, I don't have a need to feel sorry, or I didn't do this, out on parole. Because part of their curriculum and part of their expectation is that you have to admit the change, and in order for you to change, you have to admit that you were wrong in what you were doing. And so that's the situation that Bill Cosby finds himself in 2020. Let's talk about 50 Cent voting, or sorry, not voting. Let's talk about 50 Cent and Ice Cube endorsing Trump, right? So there's been a lot said about 50 Cent endorsing Trump and Ice Cube endorsing Trump, and just how they make Black America look. And to me, and so let me just put it in perspective for those of you that don't know what I'm talking about. So recently, some of our gangster image rappers have endorsed Trump. And what I think is just a look into how America is doing. You know, you break it down into categories, right? So they break it down into two. They break it down into two parties, Democrat and Republican. Then they break it down into two genres of black and white. I think they don't really understand the subcategories, though. The same way in art, in music, the white folks or the label heads or the people who are in charge, they didn't understand subgenres. And that's why you have a product like a Master P back in those times, because what'll happen is they'll get stuck on something. So first it was hip hop, boom bap, boom bap. If you wasn't doing this, they didn't think it was a market for anything else. And so if you was doing the boom bap hip hop, they didn't think that it was a market for anything, anything anywhere else, you know, or any other genre of music. So they would, that's why you had the separation from the East Coast and the South and the West. It was a real separation because the labels had us thinking that it wasn't enough room for all of these genres. The labels had us thinking that the more it is of one, the less it is of the other. They didn't really understand the subgenre. The same way with politics. They don't understand that there's, and let me keep it on the analogy of music. So you got hip hop, which is like the boom bap shit J. Cole and them used to do early, and you know, trying to fit in with the thing. I think now they kind of curved it into another direction, but back then you had the boom bap type of hip hop, and then you got your trap hip hop, you got your gangster rap, you got your DJ Mustard and them style on the West Coast. You even got your Dr. Dre on the West Coast style. Like, you know what I'm saying? You got certain people that you can't really say where they're from, like a Eminem, or even a Jay-Z evolved into that. But Jay-Z being so big that they tried to make whatever he was doing New York sound. That really was a Jay-Z sound, you know? And I mean, you had New York producers and a bunch of goats involved with it, but I'm saying, I'm sure there's New York people that had a different flavor about themselves as well. So what I'm saying is, in politics, with a 50 Cent or Ice Cube going to speak to Trump, I think it's just more so letting y'all see what America really is and helping you understand the subgenre, because you have people that are single issue voters. And if you're a single issue voter and you're a rich black man, and Biden saying 65% in the state you live in, if his shit passes, that is a deal breaker for most people. 65%. You give me $7 of your dollars every time you get 10 and see how you feel about me. I ain't going to say a word to you. You're going to hate me, though. You're not going to like me if I'm taking $6.50 out of every 10 fucking dollars you bring in or that you see. You're not going to fuck with that. So I think it's important for people to even put that in context and understand America is not just black people and white people. There's subgenres in there. There's the black rich single dad. There's the black rich dad that makes the money for the family. There's the black rich family where the woman is the breadwinner. There's the single black woman. There's the single rich black woman. There's the single household with three kids. There's the black household with the daddy come around here and there and do a little something. There's the black household where the daddy's really active. There's the, like, so that's what makes this political thing so strange to me, is because we only got two things to choose from, and it's like neither one of those have identity for me, it seems like, in the midst of it. So I think it's a funny thing to see. But you got single issue voters, man, that vote on stuff like that. But with the Democrats sometimes, or certain politicians, you know, they think all blacks should be Democrats. And it may be overwhelming that blacks are Democrats. But we can get into why on a different show. You know, why are all blacks really Democrat, and why? When did that happen? And why did it happen? We can get to that in a different show. But also, there's the rich blacks, you know, and who think about the race. That the rich blacks who are single-issue voters, and I think it's irresponsible for any of us to think that all blacks are poor, need government assistance, need food stamps, you know, and things like that. I just think that's irresponsible. Y'all give me a second. And so, yeah, so I think it's just irresponsible to think all blacks need food stamps and government assistance. You got rich blacks that care about taxes, and you got rich blacks that care about the Green New Deal, you know, conservative rich blacks. And so the outrage to see anybody that wants to not mess with Biden. See, it's crazy how they say that not messing with Biden is fucking with Trump. It's because the system that's in place. But I definitely don't. It's almost like you got a girl that has, you know, this situation and this baggage on her, and you also have a girl here that is maybe the same, but one thing, she her sex is wow. That single issue, right? That us sex, I mean, that's some of the best sex, goddammit, you done ever got. You gonna fuck around and choose her before, I mean, especially if that's the only two you got to choose from. You know what I mean? So I think, you know, just understanding common sense shit is crazy. Speaking of Tory Lanez bodyguard and all of that, Tory Lanez went live. And I'm gonna speak on Rogan too. But Tory Lanez ended up going live about the Megan Thee Stallion situation. Couple questions I had was, what was the live for? What did it accomplish? What did it do? Like, what the fuck was the live for? I'm sick of it now. I am not gonna stand back and let you get to my name. It's like, dog, they've been talking about you way before. But I guess because they charged you, now it's cool to say. You know what I mean? But I'm saying, like, you ain't had to wait. Like, I'm telling you, the interest of this shit is getting, like, I'm starting not to give a fuck about this shit. Not give a fuck about Meg being shot, because, of course, that's not something that motherfuckers want to see, dog. But I'm saying, I'm starting not to give a fuck about what's going on with this whole motherfucker, because it's too much shit going on. It's too motherfucking messy. This over here said, no, it ain't. Yeah, it is. No, it ain't. Yeah, it is. No, it ain't. Yeah, it is. Hey, I'm done with it. Like, I'm done with it. Like, y'all, man, where y'all got going? You know what I'm saying? And so it just was, you know, the live was damn funny, man. And what I got from the live, and because it really wasn't, it was a bunch of really rambling. So it really wasn't much you can get from the live. But what I got from the live and what I think is the next move is, I think Tory Lanez, if he is able to beat this, he's going to sue Roc Nation. I see him suing Roc Nation. I see him setting up a lawsuit now because of the things he's saying. You know, I see him slowly but surely trying to get some money out of Jay-Z now. Because if you see, he's trying to keep her clear of it and say it's not her. He's trying to keep her clear of it and say, hey, man, it's not her. She ain't got nothing to do with it. Roc Nation, Roc Nation, Roc Nation, Roc Nation. So if it's Roc Nation, and he's trying to set up a lawsuit, that's going to be interesting to see. And he was talking about putting black girls in his songs and videos, which as an artist, I can definitely see how you would hold that high in regard, because we all know you can choose what society feels is beautiful. You can go light skin and this or that, or whatever society looks at as the standard for beauty. But as much as I do appreciate you for putting black women in your videos and having them at the forefront of a lot of things that you do visually as an artist, I do have to reject the notion, though, that says that that you won't harm black women. I would compare it to racist companies like Ford, you know, and other companies that hire blacks and still have systematic racial things going on in the corporate side of the business. although their argument would be, we hired this individual, paid him a certain amount of money, helped him feed his family, gave him 0.6% raises and things like that. But you, it's a situation where you must understand, though, that one thing doesn't X out the other, right? You could do two things. You can hire blacks because of the, not only the climate, because the social status kind of requires that it looks like inclusion on the side of these companies, right? It's cool to have a diversity board and things of these, you know, things of that nature to be able to put up the bat signal that we're with the people. But no rules have changed. You just implement a diversity board. What does that do? They meet once a month, okay? To do what? Help do what? Y'all don't really take in information from these little diversity boards. These are illusions of inclusion. And so sometimes you do things because you have a heavy conscience. Some people can argue the fact that you put the black people, you can put black women and things like that in there because you have harmed them so much, because you've done so much to them and you feel like you owe them that. And not saying in his situation, just saying you have to understand that there's a couple of different ways to approach things. And that's why I don't like to judge things based on the outcome, because I understand there's several different ways a lot of times to get to one outcome. You see, I could say something like, hey, if I go into a club, right, I can have the stupid attitude to say, whoever, I'm not allowing a motherfucker to bump me tonight. If a bitch ass nigga bump me tonight, I'm going in his mouth, right? You can have that level of attitude walking into a club about it and be that blind to, there's too many ways this can happen. What if a girl shoe heel breaks and she bumps you falling over on a heel? You gonna kill the girl? Right? So you gotta be careful with how you understand what people are projecting. You know, I never judge things off outcome unless it's something I myself is doing. So like if I'm working out, you know, if I bust a good sweat, that's something, you know, I can judge that on outcome. But when I'm dealing with people where I can't judge their motives and agendas, and I can't see with the naked eye anyway what their intentions are, it's important for me to use context clues and not just judge about the outcome. Sometimes people help you because helping you helps them. And that's the only way they can help you. And so, but you can, that's how we get caught up, rappers get caught up in this entertainment world. There's a motherfucker coming helping you because it helps them. And then you call them family, and next thing you know, your contract is fucked. You see? Because you have a mindset of, you know, I'm judging this based on the outcome. He helped me. I remember one time I was strung out on, man, them niggas that can't do no wrong in my mind. And a motherfucker who was level head just asked me straight out, why you owe them so much loyalty? And I'm thinking to myself, that's kind of a good question. Do they give me that same loyalty? I'm not sure of that. You know what I mean? So again, that was growing up in the street and just judging on the outcome. Hey man, these folk might have helped me at a point of time in my life. You know, so I owe them that. But a nigga had to ask himself. So let me put you niggas down, right? So the young niggas, I'm going to give y'all some game. And a lot of times I talk drug talk here because it's a platform where you dealing with the street niggas, right? So I talk street, I talk drugs, and I talk the game, you know. But let me put you down, right? Sometimes, homie, that big homie of yours or that nigga you think fucking with you, he don't really fuck with you. He and I know you saying, but nah, Lone, he fuck with me. You know, he make sure I eat. He bringing me this. He making sure I'm over here goddamn eating. Bruh, sometimes niggas is getting so much of that shit, they need workhorses. You see what I'm saying? They need niggas that they know gonna pay and can get it off and ain't the police. You is a jewel to a street nigga that got a real sack. Not the nigga that can only buy enough for itself. The nigga that's hiding this shit in 3 and 4 different places and don't know where to take it. And, man, I got this, man. I'm trying to get them out of here, you know, and putting them all on consignment. And got, you know what I'm saying? So you got to understand that helping you helps him. You see, now if a nigga bring you something, even sometimes a nigga bringing you something because you ain't got none. Sometimes that helping you to help him because he understand you ain't got none. But if I build you up, you going to bring your money my way. You see what I'm saying? So it's still a give and take thing now. And I think that being able to use each other is a healthy piece of a relationship. I would reject the notion though that it makes us family, and that loyalty is bought with that. Loyalty can come through those situations, but it's not guaranteed. And I just need everybody to understand that. You know what I'm saying? Just giving you some game. Sometimes motherfucker helping you to help them, not necessarily cause they fuck with you, it's cause they fuck with them, and ain't no fucking with you gonna help them just a little bit more. You see what I'm saying? So we can't just accept the fact that you're saying I put them in videos and this and that. That's a very good thing and we appreciate it. But that doesn't exclusively say to anyone that you wouldn't do something like what they're saying has been done. And me, I don't know either way. You know, I want to talk to people like that bodyguard nigga. If he had a conversation with me, we gonna get into some. How do you know that though? Tell me how you know that. What? You get what I'm saying? Because it's important for us to not just sway these things. Let's really have a conversation or shut up about it, because this shit is doing too much to begin with. But again, I think he's trying to sue Roc Nation. He said Roc Nation called, you know. And for Roc Nation to call and tell him basically don't say nothing, and then they put the story out, they showing you we playing big dog. We playing big dog over here. And I also want to say this about the Tory Lanez live. You know what I'm saying? Because I think I didn't really get a chance to get it out, man, about, you know, a couple of things he said. I want to say this. His head and neck analogy that he put down on there had to be one of the worst motherfucking analogies I had ever heard in my life. You know, I've heard the analogy before, but the way he used it, stuttering and stiffing all around it and don't really know how to put it down, that had to be one of the worst analogies known to motherfucking hip hop. You see what I'm saying? Man, I ain't never heard no, that shit was trash. You know what I mean? So he should have practiced that a little bit more before he came out, and don't try to come out freestyling about no shit like that. You know what I'm saying? You should have thought about that one. You know what I mean? Because you said that had to be one of the worst motherfucking analogies that I heard a nigga say to try to get himself out of some trouble. Now, we done heard Tyrese cry. You know, what do you want from me? You know. And so we done heard some of the most stupidest niggas try to get themselves out of some shit and use some of the most polarizing things. We done heard Tyrese cry and, you know, Jada use entanglement and, you know, we done heard some shit, man. But you to use this head, neck thing, and so I still got to use my, you know. I said, nah, that ain't. Y'all nigga act funny, man. Y'all nigga got to do a little better with your analogies and shit. You know what I'm saying? I know some old nigga or something gave him that game. He tried to repeat it. It just didn't come out right. You should have went to the mirror with that shit a couple of more times. Just stared in the mirror and gave yourself that a couple of more times. That wasn't it. You know what I'm saying? That wasn't it. And he also responded about the part that I told y'all where I broke the story about him and Meg. Both of them. They were wondering that when Meg was saying he was talking to blogs, he was talking to academics. I'm telling y'all, academics, again, he was responding to ACT due to ACT speaking on Selena Powell. And when this first started, Selena had a story on Tory and she had a little beef with academics. So again, academics was discrediting Selena Powell by default, trying to big up Tory Lanez a little bit. That's a C-list story. Meg Tory's the A-list story. That's a C-list story. So when they hear academics, an A-list blogger talking about a C-list story, some of the internet knows, but the big internet and Meg camp and Tory camp and these people, they don't know about this C-level story. So they think when they see you bigging up Tory on your Twitch in this 3-minute clip that somebody's cut out and put online, they think that you are responding to what Tory is somehow saying to you, because you're using the name Tory Lanez, because Selena was saying something about a lawsuit and you had beef with Selena, so you would discredit Selena because she was on her way to Adam 22 to do an interview. So this is what this whole thing surrounds itself around and how it plays into that. You know, and so he even said, "Shorty, I wasn't online for 3 months. What are you talking about?" You know, academics come up in her mouth. Academics, because again, they're hearing you saying Tory Lanez. You saying Tory would do that? You know, why would you da 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 da? He was really talking to Selena, but they didn't know that, and a lot of the fans didn't know that. So when they hear that, they think it's on Meg. Even the blogger niggas didn't know that. So they'll take it from another YouTube nigga channel and put it up and say, DJ Academics tells Meg Thee Stallion and Tory Lanez story. And then this gets legs some kind of how. And then this is what you deal with. I want to ask y'all, who do we hold them? Does anybody get held accountable once we find out who does what? So do we hold Meg accountable if it comes out that Tory didn't shoot her? Do we hold Tory accountable if it comes out? Because somebody is not telling the truth, right? Somebody is not being truthful. So how do we as a culture deal with whoever is not telling the truth? Or are we only prepared to handle Tory because we feel like Meg has already took a bullet and that's enough? You know, and so even if Tory is found innocent, do we still like, I want to get into that. I want to kind of advance the conversation and kind of get into those murky waters of, you know, what do we do next? You know, and how do we look at who and what are we doing? You know, I also want to talk about so Kanye West and Joe Rogan end up doing a podcast we thought was not going to happen due to Jamie contracting COVID-19. And so we thought that the Kanye West interview wasn't going to happen. Of course, Joe Rogan made the Kanye West interview happen. Definitely a big time interview and doing great. Couple of things I want to talk about. I wonder how Spotify feels about that. I know that they would want it to be. So it is exclusive audio on Spotify, right? But I would think they would want that video to be exclusive over there really quick. But he did it before and got it out on YouTube. But I would think that they want that video on Spotify. It almost, I mean, he's going to get some more big interviews, but that one was a quick $1 million play. You know what I'm saying? So then they could have set up some ads around it knowing it was coming and probably cashed in on so much more money. So I'm sure they wanted that interview on their show. But I'm sorry, on their platform exclusively. But Kanye West ended up going up to Joe Rogan. A couple of things with this interview that I noticed on this Up There podcast. And this I noticed was that me just being a student of the game and being just someone that is really engraced in this thing, like I'm really about this thing, this is something I've studied, this whole game, this whole landscape, I know them all, I know the writers, I know the niggas that's behind the scenes, not personally a lot of them, but I know how to get to them, I know things about them, I know how they story, I know certain things. And so Rogan again, he's kind of like the big dog when it come to podcasting. So I studied his situation long time ago, way before this Spotify shit. This ain't new to me. And this is how I know so much about podcasting and his situation, because I started this back in the day. But anyway, with Rogan, it was interesting to see the atmosphere of the interview. And the reason I say that is because I'm not sure Rogan, first of all, the first 35 or 40 minutes of the interview, Kanye West was just talking really by himself. And shout out to Joe Rogan, knowing how not to get in there and play like you know what the fuck somebody talking about, and then turn the interview into a shit show because the host has now lost traction of everything going on. But if you notice, the first 35 minutes, I believe, is really just Kanye West talking, because he's talking about stuff where Joe really can't chime in. He's talking about the music business and he's talking about religion. I'm not sure Joe Rogan subscribes to the religion thing. And I know he doesn't know anything about the music business. He doesn't know anything about a football reference that you're saying, or a basketball reference, or any of these things. You know, one thing I could appreciate about the interview, and that a lot of my fans were asking, you know, why wouldn't he stay in hip hop? If he don't come holler at somebody like me that's going to push back, or you know, a couple of different guys in this culture, he would have a good time if he did that, you know, because he would be able to connect with us. And I'm explaining what I'm saying. First of all, with Rogan, you know, him and Rogan's been talking about doing this interview for such a long time. And this didn't come to as a surprise to anyone that knows the market or knows the industry. You knew that him and Kanye was supposed to do this a while back, and Rogan even threw a couple of shots before, you know, saying that just forget it. I'm not really tripping on it, because Rogan's a superstar in his own right. Definitely. That's why you don't see him pander and play the little game. Like, yeah, let me get in here and talk about, you know, basketball like I know, because you're famous. No, I'm going to be quiet and let you talk and get your points out. But yeah, to see to be sitting across from a black man that's, you know, a billionaire, that's more successful than Rogan, that's more, I would say probably more influential than Rogan, you know, Kanye West, man, from rap to fashion to all that shit, you know, he's the guy. But to see him still using religion, I just wondered how the atmosphere was with Rogan, because I think Rogan looks at religion like it was used to trick us. When I say us, I mean black Americans. You know, we believe in God. We know God is real. God has showed up in our lives in so many different ways, and things. But you got certain people like Rogan and the Scientology, that whole side of things, where they look at life from a scientific perspective. And they think that we evolved from, which there's evidence of that as well. And so it gets slippery. So to see these two people sit down, right? So you got Rogan as a tycoon in his own right, and you got Kanye West, who's a tycoon in his own right. And here West comes in standing on God, standing on Jesus. And here Rogan is kind of standing on science. For this interview to go forward, though, Rogan is going to have to do one or two things. One, he's going to have to either acknowledge God as the definition that we know, that we project, and what Kanye West is rolling with. He has to either, one, do that, or he has to, two, compartmentalize this God talk that Kanye West is coming with, and putting it in a situation where he attaches it in his mind to higher power, positive energy. You know, they like to say, certain times they like to say, you know, just positive energy, like a higher power, just the universe, just the anything but somebody that rose in 7 days and things like that. They like to poke holes into the Adam and Eve thing. That's why it was very interesting to, not just the Adam and Eve thing, just those stories out of the Bible. That's why it was very interesting to see Kanye mention it every 2 seconds, and Rogan have to compartmentalize it to conduct his interview, or would it turn into a argument? So what about this? Or what about that? Or what about this? And what about that? So the first 30 or 40 minutes, you know, you see that, which was crazy. And And like I said, sometimes I think they look at us like we're dumb when it comes to God, and we put so much in the unknown and we put so much in the unseen. But it's felt, you know, it's really felt. And I think when we talk about things that's felt, they more so put that, like I say, if you say that to someone who isn't subscribing to religion, they can compartmentalize with something like that when you say it's felt. Because even people like Rogan, they do DMT and things like that. So they see things, they go on the other side of this shit. So it's, you know, it's a lot to that, man. It's a lot to unpack with that. And y'all got to keep riding with me. I'll unpack some of it, but it's too much for me to do right now in one setting for y'all, because I'm building the audience. And so I don't want to lose people who don't understand where I'm going with that. So I want to kind of get into that and get out of it. But if you stay with me, you'll learn with us. You'll learn a lot of this game they putting down. You know what I'm saying? But again, just blacks putting so much into the unseen and the unheard, you know, and the unknown. And Rogan, you know, like I said, they look at Inception of Life from a scientific standpoint, and, you know, and I don't think they go with the God theory that we live with. And they know it was used to trick us, you know. But people like me and Kanye, we didn't come to. And like I said, people say, hey, man, he should have stayed in hip hop. They said it to me, man, he should have went to Biden or Charlamagne. Listen, if he don't come to Loon or it's up there podcast, you know, he may not get the results. You know, he can come into hip hop and you can drop a couple of names on a lot of these dudes and they're, oh, my God, he's a genius. Oh, fuck, he just dropped names. Like, that don't do it for niggas like me or Rogan or other niggas who really done got some information. So if you see, you know, Kanye West, he come up there and he talked to Rogan, or if he would talk to me or someone like me about Bruce Lee or Tesla. I know something about the Bruce Lee. Yeah, I know about that. Yeah, I know about Tesla. I know about the Ice Age. I know about almost anything you can get to. And if not, if I don't know about it, then I have to take the back seat. But it's like a double dutch conversation is. So the closer you get to getting to something I'm ready to talk about, or I know shit, I can jump on in with yeah da 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 da, or what I'm on, you know what I'm saying? So again, you know, whatever you want to talk about. You want to talk about Tesla selling the bomb? I know about that. You want to talk about the Moors? You want to talk about religion? You want to talk about, you know, whatever you want to talk about. You see what I'm saying? And that's I think that's where the difference comes in. That, yeah, you know, like I say, Kanye is a brilliant mind. Rogan is a brilliant mind. There's so much information in between those two guys. I think they should talk more. But I just also think that Kanye should be in a situation to come and holler at, you know, me or one of us or somebody on this side, that when he go into the God talk. We know mama and them always talked about God, and we saw granny get up every Sunday and go holler at the pastor, and we know pastor and them did their best and tried to help the community when they could, and we saw, you know, the church get broke into and the pastor still come and give out turkeys and things of that nature. So, you know, because Rogan doesn't share that experience, but Rogan shares a lot of information. And I think he handled the interview right. I mean, I learned from the interview what I learned from the interview as a broadcaster, as a podcaster, as a guy on the mic, is don't get in there and try to, yeah, I know what you're talking about for the sake of just trying to do that. Because when you do that, you turn the interview to a place where you, as the person that's supposed to control the interview, know nothing about. And then we're in a situation where we're wallowing and talking about things where I'm completely fake and not confident. And I think the audience can feel that. Also, I saw Kanye West do something. I said, I think he learned that as he got rich. And because when you're so influential and so powerful, I think these things, your way of communicating changes. I saw, and with Rogan, by him being a comedian, he hasn't lost that. he hasn't lost the ability to be able to laugh at a joke. And Kanye West can't laugh at certain things. Number one, because he's running for president. And number two, when he laughs at something, it's almost like endorsing it. So if you notice, somewhere along the lines, Kanye West started to give you a, anytime he knew a camera was watching, he would start to give you a stale face. You could have just threw a joke at him. He'll just stale face you because the camera's around. I'm sure off the camera, he's laughing, cracking, smiling, whatever. So Rogan got in a place where he said something that I think could be took away. I can't think of what it was. Not really offensive, but just kind of on the fence. You know, a comedian. You know, comedian shit. And so I think he said something Kanye West just... He ain't do no facial expression. Because again, laughing and kikiing and kakaing sometimes endorses what's going on, and you don't want to fall victim to that. You don't want to be the person that endorsing the fuckery or endorsing what's going on. You know what I'm saying? On that side of things. So I definitely understand it. But definitely a great interview. Definitely something worth watching if you ain't went and seen it. Another thing that they just kind of glossed over that I would love to talk to Kanye West about or have someone speak to him about is he said he kind of blames the industry, the music industry, on the kind of the death of his mom. And for those of you that don't know, of course, RIP to his mom, and I couldn't imagine the feeling of it. I'm dealing with something with my with one of my loved ones, her father, is going through some things that is making me reevaluate time again. As sensitive as I knew time was, as much as I knew time was important, and as in high regard I held time, and as much I put in the time, I just reevaluating it again, because things happen so quick, and death is just it's just a powerful thing. But I think for you, for those of you that don't know, Kanye West's mom, if I'm not mistaken, allegedly was having a lipo or some sort of facelift, some sort of cosmetic surgery, ended up transitioning on the, you know, in the middle of it. And so, just, you know, to hear him say he kind of blames that on hip hop, as you always want to keep up with shit. You always want to look like this or that, or keep the best this or the new jewelry or the different cut diamond that the other niggas ass ain't got. This cut, nigga, this cut here costs an arm, a leg, nigga. You know, that cheap ass diamonds you got on. I mean, niggas is having them level of conversation. You know what I'm saying? Them cheap ass diamonds. And it's like these diamonds, though. You know what I'm saying? But I know some niggas don't understand the quality of diamonds. So they don't get, they can't get into that weird place. But again, it's all for nothing, to be honest. You know what I'm saying? It's really all about nothing. You know, once you start getting that shit and you look up, man, and you worth $1 million but got $4 million in jewelry, you hustling backwards. You know what I'm saying? You buy a chain every birthday or something, you tripping. You ain't buying no cribs or the, like, how you still buying chains every birthday? Like, you, like, look, once you get you a good chain, you got you one or two or maybe two setups, three setups, unless you really just got it. But if you still building, nigga, you ain't owning 10 houses and got 18 streams of income, boy, you not better not buy your fifth chain. Man, these nigga ass is crazy, man. They crazy, man. What else was I just thinking about that Kanye West said? So, yeah, I mean, I think it was a pretty cool, you know, pretty cool interview, man. Again, shout out to Rogan, shout out to Kanye. You know, like I just said, two brothers doing their thing. But again, you get into that weird place where it's, you know, I got this more, I got that more, I got this more, I got that more, I got this more. You know, we be fighting about shit that ain't worth nothing. You know what I'm saying? Shit that ain't much worth nothing. So, man, in this game, it'll have you chasing your tail. You know what I'm saying? In this game, it'll have you chasing your tail. Man, you got $3 million in jewelry, and you got $780,000 in the bank, and you ain't paid your taxes yet. But you looking good in the mall. You keep getting your car wrapped. You done wrapped your car 15 times. You know what I mean? You ain't paid your taxes. But again, these niggas is hustling for the likes and the fame. But I think it's a disease, man. It's a disease, man. You know, it's a disease. You dig what I mean? It's a disease. And Kanye also is trying to do what he did in fashion again with housing. Now I think he's trying to get in a place where he can get some of that government money. Some of that government contract money and shit. You know, I'm doing these 15 communities, you know what I'm saying? And I get this amount to do it through the government. You know what I mean? So I see what he's doing, but it's like he's trying to use the same game. I think they done equipped themselves to that game. Now you got to switch it. He's saying, well, they're still trying to marginalize me. It almost sounds like now. So if you're a hip hop guy, or you just a culture guy, you see what I mean? It's like he went from, if you go back to that interview with Sway, when it's marginalized me, and then you go 5 years later, he's a billionaire. So he's trying to do that again. So they're marginalized me. They're telling me that, you know, I've did good with fashion. I've did good with music. I've did good with this. But they don't want me to redo the communities. You know, they don't want me to re-envision the way schools are set up and get a school in every, you know. It's what's the name? You know, it's just a lot of game being put down. And of course, I think he really has these ideas, but I also understand the other side of it. And speaking of these schools, Dr. Umar, you got a lot of pressure now. A lot of niggas is getting schooled. A lot of niggas trying to get in your lane. The famous motherfucker, they trying to get in your lane, Dr. Umar. So you know, you got to produce something quick, which I know you're on the clock. So you finna do it because that's all they really can say about you. So you finna try to shut that down. I already know you finna try to shut that down. Anybody in their right mind? Anybody in their right mind know you finna shut, you know. Anybody in their right mind know you finna try to shut that down. But yeah, man. So, and like I said, and also for y'all, man, I was thinking about looking at Joe Budden podcast, right? So I got so much traction on my interview with Joe Rogan and explaining how he's losing $1 million a week that I started to think about Joe Budden's situation. And I said, you don't want loon looking into you, because then I started to figure out, oh, hold on. So the Joe Budden podcast numbers, if we're just going by projections, and hopefully they are, but I'm just giving some game to the people who follow me and listen to for this type of game or information. The numbers should have tripled by now. Reason I'm saying that is they're on all these different platforms. The same way I speak about how Rogan is going to lose interest because he's on one platform, Budden should be now gaining interest because he's now on 20, 30, 40 platforms with his podcast with a well-sought product. But when I look at the numbers that he drops on YouTube, I'm not sure. See, when you used to look at the numbers on YouTube, you got to understand that some people wouldn't go see it on Apple, wouldn't go see it on Anchor, wouldn't go see it on Pod Addict or whatever these, or Google Podcasts or whatever it may be. They would go see it on YouTube. You see? So it's almost like either you are able to supplement that with the audience that, hey, our YouTube numbers aren't hitting a million as quick, or are hitting a million as quick, but we're losing interest on the audio side because we're dropping it the same day, or our numbers are not reaching a million on the YouTube side because people are now consuming it on Google Play, which is not the video. But they couldn't get it over there at first, and they didn't have Spotify, so YouTube was the only other app. You see what I'm saying? And also, you now have taken out that whole Spotify land that you built. To me, that was a backwards move. That was an ego move. It's a lot of ego moves. You just built something in Spotify land. Stay, even if you don't do business with them, let's keep the fucking podcast there. We built something there. For the sake of saying fuck you, we're taking it down. We don't even know what the fuck we're doing yet. Again, if Joe Budden was using the boxing promotion add space model. He could have already had Complex, Spotify, and Cash App already. Dissolve with Complex in a way where they can't do business, which is a bunch of other little companies. Dissolve in Spotify in a way where they can't do business. So now you just see Lonely Cash App, and today say fuck you. You better make something happen. You better be listening to me. I gave you a lot of game in my last podcast on how to make you the money. Just implement some of that. I know some, y'all got people scouring the internet for this shit because I know how you dudes get out. So I know you dudes are seeing this, you listening to this. Put some of the game in motion. But the number should have tripled by now because now you're available everywhere. So it's like behind the scenes, you should be seeing, you know, if you would have stayed on Spotify, your usual millionaire. You million on YouTube. Hopefully now you see a million on Apple. Hopefully you see 400,000 on PodAddict. You see another 110,000 on Anchor. You see 80,000 on SoundCloud. Like, and all these numbers together puts you in a position to say, whoa. Now what do we charge to do, you know, ads on this thing just like a YouTube, you know? So it's just good game, you know? It's just good game. But, and the last thing I want to talk about is I saw an interview, shout out David Letterman, Kim Kardashian on David Letterman's show, very well. I want my next show to be like that. Not like that, but in that vein. I want to be in front of people because, I'm entertaining and I can get in there and, you know, fuck around with it, you know, so as long as I'm comfortable. So I want to do something like that, and I think I'm going to do it real soon independently if don't nobody cut me no check. But Kim K interview, she was speaking well. She spoke on being famous or being from a famous family. She made a good point on why. That's why I always like to listen to people talk, because you may have a preconceived notion about how people are, what they're doing, or how they conduct themselves, and then you listen to them and say, "Whoa." But you listen to them and you say, "Whoa, that was dope. Like, that person is a dope fucking person." And so she was just speaking on, you know, they were saying, "Hey, man, you know, basically saying that you're only famous because you're famous." So it's almost like, but how did you initially, you know what I mean? It's like you basically, people try to say Kim Kardashian doesn't bring anything. She's just famous because she's famous. And so she responded to that. She said, "You know what? I think." And that's why I say, man, context and just perspective is so dope. She said, "You know what I think? I think that it's harder being yourself because people got to like you for you. So when you got the camera on you this much, I can't go and be Denzel, which is like I'm an officer in training day, and then I'm a doctor in saving whatever, and then I'm a what's the name in Man on Fire, and then I'm a fucking hitman in Equalizer." Like, you can recreate yourself, so your fans, all these niggas, love you for different reasons, which makes your impact kind of lessen a little bit. But when everybody loves you just for being you, like a Cardi B or some shit, now they got music she can hang on, but I'm just saying, they just fuck with you, that's a totally different thing. That shit is like a and she said, "I think that's harder because I can't recreate it. They got to watch 10 seasons because they like who I am as an individual." And I said, "Well, when you look at it like that, I mean, I think that's a pretty good point. I think that's a pretty, pretty magnificent fucking point there." But hats off to David Letterman. Such a great interview. You know, such a great person when he interviews, just like Rogan, just like Loon, just like Budden, just like Charlemagne. It's a lot of great guys doing this thing. And I saw him segue from talking about the kids and the family to where he can get a comfortable, like I said, just a great interview guy. And it's just game that I'm picking up as I'm watching certain things. So he wanted to get to the Caitlyn Jenner conversation. So he knew he couldn't just say, "So what's going on with Caitlyn?" That's how we think that's talent in hip hop. I don't really, you know, do that. But we think that's talent in hip-hop. Because a nigga got some nuts to say, you know, "What's up with the phone calls with you and the girl, man?" You know, I'm not a big fan of that. I think that conversations are more effective when they are just dances. And so he said something about the kids, right? Something about the auntie and all of that. But he wanted to get to Caitlyn Jenner. So he knew when he asked about the kids and the family that she was going to have to mention Caitlyn Jenner's kids. So then that would segue me into asking you about, you know, Caitlyn Jenner, I think is her name. So when that's happening, so she didn't mention it, but he stayed calm and just said, well, what about Caitlyn? And he said, oh, yep. And he kind of was able to get into that. So that was just dope to see. Just me learning without going to school. I think a lot of these dudes went to school. They didn't really get much. I'm able to learn from a free mind. I don't have the confines of this frame per second is dead. I don't have all of that. I'm just able to look and say, oh, dope. Slow it down. You know, whatever it might be. So it's good game. So, again, man, we're going to talk about Maul and Brandon Jennings. I didn't get a chance to get into that. But for all my motherfucking people, we're going to talk about Maul from the Joe Budden Podcast and Brandon Jennings. I need everybody who know, got a link where I can find out what the fuck is going on. Because evidently, here's a clip. I mean, not a clip, but here's a picture of Brandon Jennings put down. Here's a picture Brandon Jennings put up. Because Maul says something on the Joe Budden Podcast about him having a beef with one of his homies, and his homie was just too egotistical. Here's a clip. So evidently he was talking about football player Brandon Jennings. So there has to be some sort of beef there, and I think Brandon Jennings has something to do with that merch tough crowd that Maul used to wear that he no longer wears. See, they don't introduce any of these topics onto the Joe Budden Podcast when things are happening, yet you sit there and talk about everybody's topics all day. Very interesting. I don't get why you don't head on this shit. Now, you brought that to the forefront, then this dude responded, which I don't think that's real nigga shit either, to respond to some shit that's undercover. If you felt like when I see that boy I'm at him, just go holler at him and really try to make yourself available to holler at him. Go see him. Now, I don't know talking no more. We tried that. I told you keep my name out your mouth. So when I see you, we going platinum. It ain't nothing. It just that's what it is. Soon I run into you, we going platinum. It's period. So that's what I think you should have done, is made yourself available. But I'm going to figure out what's going on with that, and we'll report on that on next week. Again, I want to say thank you for everybody that's watching this Up There Podcast. Rate, subscribe, share. Put somebody down on this Up There Podcast. Show them, hey, this is that new shit. Tap into this dude hard. Or he learned how to do it. He ain't perfect yet, but dude going to be something. Just turn... tune in to that nigga. He gonna be something. Just give him a second, right? He peeping game. Boy, that boy had to have a bag before this shit, cause ain't no way in hell he could be broke with that type of information. Listen, you see anybody around me, you don't see all of that. This here, I built this here. I want to thank everybody that's watching this. It's Up There Podcast, FOGFOTV. Go get my album. It's Dead Ball. It's out right now. If you ain't never heard a nigga rap and podcast at a high level, you looking at him, Jack. And I ain't one of them Bruce-ass niggas either, man. So it's up, man. And I appreciate y'all. Gang.